My name is Helen Gray. My friends call me Buzzy. And my husband Skip and I live here on the grounds of Glen Eyrie. The pink house, which is right behind the bighorn here, was built by the third owner of Glen Eyrie as his own home. He didn't want to live in the castle, and so he brought as much of the castle as he could into the house with the paneled oak walls and ceiling in the dining room, just like the Great Hall. And there are three very large bedrooms, and the Navigators asked us a year and a half ago to move in there and develop it as a guest house. So we have one of the large bedrooms, we have two big guest rooms, and a very large dining room table that seats 15 feet long, and a lovely living room where we have days of prayer for the staff, receptions, teas, meetings of all kinds, and Skip and I have the privilege of living there and using it for the Lord. The topic I was given, I guess, and they'll know I'm lying. That'll work. I was asked to share this morning on the topic of the wife's role in the ministry. I'm sure that you're here because you have an interest in that subject. There are two extremes, as all of you know. There is the woman who is over-involved in the ministry to the neglect of her family, to put in question, I think, what her real priorities are. Because sometimes when a woman becomes overly involved, there really isn't time for the first priority, enough time, which is her walk with God. And we're not going to spend time on that this morning. I'm sure there are workshops to cover that subject. But that must be the first priority in our lives. And I do know women who get so involved in ministering to other people that there is no root system left. There is no inner life to overflow to others, and so they're ministering to other people out of an empty life. And it can be a very dangerous trap because we think we're doing God's will and giving ourselves to other people and not having our priorities really in order. Another difficulty, I think, with the woman who is overly involved in the ministry is that she's giving to other women a negative example because they're looking at her and thinking this is what someone who is really sold out to Christ should be doing. And there's a danger that they see her and try to live their lives after her model. And it can come across with a negative effect on other people who aren't like her and whom God hasn't called to minister in that way. Then there's the wife who's under-involved and who uses the fact that my family, my husband and my children are my ministry, in part as a cover-up or a cop-out to not be involved with other people. That would be very easy for me. I could be totally content, I think, in the four walls of my house. And I say I think because I've never been given the opportunity to find out. That's my own self-image, but perhaps it really wouldn't be true. But I do know women like that, who are timid, like me, insecure, feel they have nothing to give to anyone else. And I think many times people are under-involved because of their fears and insecurities and not because of a conviction that their family comes first. Sometimes it's really an unwillingness to give myself to other people. It's not really caring enough about others and their needs. And basically it boils down for a lot of people to selfishness and being just more concerned about myself and my insecurities and my doing what I want to do than a real concern about the needs of other people and extending myself to them. So as you know, what we all want is a balance between those two extremes, and for each of us, it'll be different. If you had a line, and one extreme was at one end and one at the other, all of us should be somewhere in between and not necessarily exactly in the middle, but in the place that God has chosen for us specifically. think what we need to do individually and excuse me, with our husbands, is to come to the Lord and say, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? But in order to do that, we need to come with a really open heart. And I understand that was your message this morning, was on your heart. Because until we can come to the Lord and say, Lord, what do you want me to do? With no strings, no preconditions, and really seek from him. And if he asks us to extend ourselves to other people, and it's not in keeping with what we really would prefer to do, we better not pray that prayer. But that's what I would urge you to do. And it's what I continually have to do myself, is say, Lord, what involvement do you want me to have? There are quite a number of things that determine what our involvement should be in the ministry. And I don't think any of this is new to most of you. But to cover the subject, I think we need to consider each one of these determining factors. One is there are different seasons in our lives. There is the season before we have any children. And, of course, this topic is for wives, so we're talking about married women. There is, of course, the season as well before we're married. But for us, the season of after we're married, before we have children. There's much more time, much more freedom. Sherry here in the front row has been married, what, 3 weeks? 5 weeks. And her husband is an intern staff, or is he intern staff with the Navigators, and she's going to be very involved. She already has been as a single woman. And God will use her in the lives of many others, because in this season of her life, she has more time. Then there's the season where we have preschoolers. And many women find that a period of their life when they don't think they can have any ministry at all. It's all I can do to keep my head above water and maybe even squeeze a few minutes in somewhere with the Lord. And most of you have been there and have felt that. However, for a woman who really has a heart to minister to others, I believe it's possible to minister to one other woman during that season of life. Maybe more. But just through loving a neighbor or a friend from church or someone else who wants to grow and knows less about the Lord than you do, I believe it's possible for the mother of toddlers to have a ministry, even if it's just one other woman. And I really would plead with you to not allow that season of life to be a time when you just check out and say, I can't manage it. Elizabeth Elliott was here last week for the whole week to minister in a church. And somehow Stacy Reinhardt managed to get her over here Saturday night to minister to the trainees who were here at Glen Eyrie. And I wasn't able to go to the meeting, but she spoke to them on, I can't, but God can. And she said, you know, it's interesting, when you speak on a given topic, God gives you the opportunity to apply it yourself, because she came with almost no voice at all. And this was the first of a whole week of meetings for her. And so she was able to apply what she was speaking. I can't, but God can. And I think that's true of a mother with toddlers. We can find time with the Lord. We can give away our lives to one other person. I figure that for the average family, if this is the average family, with four children 2 years apart, that it's 12 years from the time your first one is born till your last one goes to school. That's a long time, and it would be a long time to not give yourself to someone else. And I would hate to see us just check out for 12 years. Now, for many, it won't be that many, but it could be, and it could be more. Then there's the years when our children are in school and we're involved in being a room mother, Cub Scout den mother, Little League baseball games, Pioneer Girls at Church, or what have you, and we're all involved in the lives of our children. We can make time. In the midst of all of that busyness and activities and the training that we're giving to our children, for at least one other person. If we have a heart and really desire to give away our lives. Then there are the teen years. And that's a whole new ballgame, as a number of you know. For those of you who have little children, believe me, teenagers take more time than little children. Don't they? They need more hours. Little children are content with a little bit of play here and reading a story there and that sort of thing. But teenagers need hours for talk time. And until they get their driver's license, many, many driving hours going to this and that. And there might be, in some particular cases, a period in your life when you do have to just stop everything to give yourself to a particular needy child. And that's okay. It's, I think, the pattern of our lives that's the important thing. And then there's the empty nest, which Elaine, you and I, and Georgia probably are the only ones in this room who have an empty nest. Do you? You don't yet. Oh, really? Then we're back to square one. We're back to where we were before, and we can give ourselves more to people in the ministry because we do not have children at home. So life has its seasons. The second determining factor, I believe, has to do with our gifts. And what God has, by the way he created us, given us enabling to do. This is a very tempting area in which to compare ourselves. And we see people with gifts differing than ours, and we don't try to do anything because we're not like her. And so we want to do what she's doing, and we can't, and so we think, I can't do anything. That's my tendency. I look at some of my idols in the ministry, some of the people that I look up to, and I think, well, I can't do it like them, so I must not be able to do anything. And with the temperament that God has given me, I abuse it and have a tendency to think, I don't have any gifts. But God has gifted every one of us to minister in the special way that he designed us to do. And we need to find out what that is. One of the best ways to discover our gifts, and this is not a seminar on gifts, is just to ask yourself, what do I enjoy doing? God is not going to ask you to minister in a way that is going to strip all your gears and make you miserable doing something you don't like. He has given you joy in doing the thing that he made you good at. And so just ask yourself, what do I enjoy? That probably has something to do with my gifts and with the way God intended me to minister, because he created me that way. Now, in saying that, sometimes God asks us to do things that we aren't real good at and aren't that don't enjoy that much. Like, for me, it's giving seminars. I do it because the Lord and my husband push me into it. And because somehow the Lord has enabled me to have enough feedback to realize that God does use it in people's lives. And so I do it not because it's the thing I really feel most comfortable with. So sometimes God will ask you to do that, to stretch you and to use you in ways that aren't your favorite thing. But he will use you in things that are your favorite thing, provided it's giving, not self-centered. There are many different ways in which we can minister. One of them is just helps or good works, just doing for other people. Acts of love, consideration, lifting the load. And I think for some of us who don't feel like we're public people, we take great comfort in the fact that the gift of helps is just as important as the gift of evangelism or the gift of teaching. And that God can use us by taking a cake to a neighbor who's just come home from the hospital, or doing a laundry or some ironing for a friend who's having a struggle. Whatever the gift of helps is in your situation, it is just as valid, and it's a way of ministering. The gift of hospitality is spoken to much in the scriptures, and so is good works. I meant to bring another translation with me, and I forgot it. Romans 12:13. Paul says, distributing to the necessity of saints, given to hospitality. And it's one of the things that God is very pleased when we give ourselves and our home and share with other people. Hebrews 13:2 says, do not be forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Now, I don't know all the meaning of that verse, but I do know that the exhortation for us is to be given to entertaining others, including strangers. The Romans verse says to the saints, and this one says to strangers, which could include almost anyone. 1 Timothy 5:10 is a very interesting verse. It's a verse about widows. And it says that the church is responsible to take care of widows if, in verse 10, she has been known for good works, if she's brought up children, lodged strangers, washed the saints' feet, relieved the afflicted, and diligently followed every good work. Sometimes that verse gets overlooked because it's a verse to widows. But a widow isn't going to become this the day after her husband dies. This is the way she's going to live because all through her married life, this is the way she lived. And so everything that it says here about widows is what you and I should be considering as part of our life while we're wives. And this is part of our ministry, is good works, bringing up children, lodging strangers, ministering to the afflicted and those who come into her home, following every good work. And so that's a very clear ministry, that if we are diligent about those things today, then when the time for widowhood comes, we will already have developed a pattern of giving ourselves to other people, and we won't draw into our shell and withdraw from people. Hospitality is not putting on the most lavish dinner or tea that anyone in the neighborhood could. I've struggled with that for years, what is the name of the book on hospitality? Open Heart, Open Home. What's her name? Karen Maines. Is a tremendous help. And if you're not familiar with it and want to develop more of the art of hospitality, it would really be a blessing. I should get it so I'd have it with my stack of books here. But she has helped me and many others to see that it's not how elaborate your entertaining is, but how much you make people comfortable and how much you give of yourself. Someone asked me 2 or 3 days ago, was my gift the gift of hospitality? And I said, well, if I compare myself with other people, I would say no, because I compare myself with some Navigator wives who can put on these gorgeous dinners and banquets and teas, and they're so elaborate and so fancy, and I just look at them and I think, you know. And then I get insecure. But if I consider the fact that having people in my home and enjoying them and making them comfortable is something that I enjoy doing, then I guess I do have a gift of hospitality. And it's one reason why Skip and I can enjoy the Pink House and be comfortable there, and the Navigators could feel comfortable asking us to do what we're doing. It must be in keeping with our gifts and my gifts in particular. And so I'm comfortable with that. If I am cautious in my own heart to not compare myself and to be myself, that will put other people at ease to be themselves. Some of the other things that we can do in the area of ministry are ministering to children, either in your church or good news clubs in your neighborhood, things of that nature. I love my own children and my grandchildren, but I am not the kind of person who dotes on other people's children. Some of you are. And to some people, being with children is just the most fun thing in their lives. Well, take advantage of that and in some way figure out how you can minister to some children. Some of you have the gift of teaching. And leading a woman's Bible study or teaching a Bible class in your church is something that God would want to use you to do if it's an area that you enjoy. I know some friends who are so gifted in teaching, and I would love to be. But God hasn't gifted me that way. And I can learn from them, and I can study their example and do some teaching. And some of you may need to take advantage of that gift. Some people have the gift of evangelism. I know I have a friend who almost every town she has lived in, she's led her next door neighbor to Christ. I hardly get to know my next door neighbor. And I've never had that opportunity. But I do think that some of us, because evangelism is not our gift, we are hesitant even to share the gospel. And we need to be very careful about that. That we don't back off and not learn how to share the gospel and become skillful in giving the gospel to those who don't know Christ and leading them to Christ if God opens their hearts. But for others, there is a tremendous gift of evangelism, and they just win people to Christ all over the place. And I'm excited when I see people like that, and it's tremendous. Sometimes we just build on someone else's foundation, and we have the opportunity to help someone make a decision when someone else has for years laid a foundation. Yesterday afternoon, Skip and I had a very, very rare privilege. Last week at the conference, there was a couple on Navigator staff here from Michigan who have been involved with the daughter and her boyfriend of a couple who live here in town. They've come to Christ. They're in Bible study. They were living together. They have since stopped living together, and they're getting married in 3 weeks and are growing tremendously in the Lord. And so the staff couple was out here, and they invited the parents who live here in Colorado Springs out to Glen Eyrie for dinner, and then spent the whole evening going over the bridge illustration, which is an illustration to show how you are a sinner and can come to Christ. And so at the end of the evening, they didn't even go to the meeting. At the end of the evening, I said, well, do you think you're ready to make this decision? And they said, no, we need to think about it a little bit. So Dean gave their names to Skip and said, why don't you follow up on this? So yesterday afternoon, we invited them over to our home. And after going over the gospel with them again, Skip said, are you ready now? And they said, yes. It was just as simple as that. Their first reaction was, but it's so simple, you know? And isn't that often true when we share the gospel? It's too simple. But they sat there in our living room yesterday afternoon and prayed and gave their hearts to Christ. And the husband just tears. He said, I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, it was just such a joy. And yet we had nothing to do with the friendship with those people, or we'd only known them an hour. But their daughter had been praying for them, and their son is involved with a navigator somewhere in the military. I don't even know where. And so that was a real joy. Special privilege for us, and we're going to get together with them Tuesday night and go over the first Bible study. So that's exciting. But even when you don't have the gift of evangelism, God gives you special opportunities like that. When the Lord gave the Great Commission, He commissioned every one of His children to be a discipler, that we should disciple all nations for Him. And I believe that the bottom line of ministering, even though we might have helps and hospitality and the other gifts, that we do need to be asking the Lord, who can I pour my life into? Who can I disciple that will be more like Jesus Christ because of her contact with me? There is someone who knows less about the Bible than you do, and someone that you can help. And I think if we start praying and saying, Lord, who can I share my life with, that God will bring someone to us, either to lead to Christ or to help to grow, that we can disciple by pouring our lives into them. This little book has just recently come out by NAV Press, Reaching Your World, Disciple Making for Women, by Beth Mainhood. Beth is a single woman. Most of her ministry has been to single women. She's a staff woman in the Navigators. But many, many of the young women to whom she has ministered are now wives, and she's built some very solid foundations in their lives. She also has ministered to women. And the book is not just for single women. She touches on areas for married women, and there's much application that you and I can use. And if you feel like you don't know how to disciple someone else, this little book could be very helpful to you. And of course, in the bookstore, there are many other books that are helpful in that area. I'm going to read you a paragraph from this in just a minute. And then I think one other ministry that the Lord gives to us is that of counseling, or just encouragement. Some of us are not trained counselors to deal with severe problems, but many times counseling is just listening and encouraging. If we are really interested in other people and in listening to where they are and are diligent ourselves in the study of the Word of God, we can help someone else by listening and sharing with them what God has taught us from the Word. And when I ask my husband what he thinks my gift is, he says it's the gift of encouragement. I don't work at it. I don't try by jumping up and down to encourage people. And that's why I just would say to you, whatever comes naturally and is a joy for you to do. Someone told me this week that the girls here on the Glen that I just have casual contact with unanimously say every conversation they have with Buzzy, they come away with something that God has used in their lives. Well, that's very humbling to me because I don't try to be a blessing to them. I don't try to share some significant truth with them. What I do try to do is deepen my life in the Word of God and walk with Him and let Him change my life. And if that's going to be true, then every casual contact we have, something will overflow that God will use, especially if you have the gift of encouragement. But then we can all be encouragement too, can't we? And some of us are more adept at counseling. And I think that probably, Georgia, I don't know if it's true, but I think you probably really have a gift for counseling other women. I don't know if you feel that. Your husband does? Uh-huh. And I have a number of friends who are excellent at drawing people out and getting down to the root of what it is underneath that is really bothering them. And, of course, you can develop it, too, by study and taking some classes on how to be a counselor and that sort of thing. The thing I'm trying to encourage you with is find out what you're good at and develop that. And also be available to the Lord in the other arenas. And keep in mind that the bottom line is discipling. So that don't hide behind, well, my gift is hospitality, therefore I can't disciple. Discipling is the responsibility of every one of us, through whatever means He gives us. Another determining factor is my husband. What he wants me to be involved in, and his schedule and activities. Some husbands are gone a great deal, and so their wives are able to be more involved in leading women's Bible studies or Good News Clubs for children, that sort of thing. If your husband is home a lot and really desirous of having a ministry together, then that will determine what your involvement is. If together you are given to ministering to couples, then that should be your main emphasis. And one of the things that Skip has continually tried to help me see is I don't want you to run off getting involved with a whole bunch of women because God has called us to minister together. And I could easily lead Bible studies with several different groups of women. But for us, that is not a priority because God has called us to minister together as a couple. But it is a priority for some other people because their husbands are involved in other things. Or with some people, their husbands are not interested in being involved at all. And so God will lead you depending on your husband's desires and his involvement. We may want to come back to that at the end for some questions. We'll see. Another factor that needs to be mentioned is in the area of physical limitations. I don't want any of you to go away from this workshop with a guilt trip if you really have severe limitations, particularly physically. The first year we were with the Navigators, we lived with a couple on the Navigator staff who had a baby with four different birth defects. And that mother still led a Bible study for wives, but that was all she did because this baby took all of her time, but one night a week when he was asleep, you know, and I would babysit, she could meet with some wives. Or maybe it's personal physical limitations that really limit you in what you can do. We need to be realistic about our own capacity, and there again, not to compare with others. Some people have a tremendous capacity, and they can spend hours ministering to people because they whip through their housework and their children don't need a lot of attention, and they just give everywhere. And then there's others like me that just get absolutely drained and worn out after 1 hour with one woman, because I don't have that much capacity for giving myself to other people. I do it, and I want to, but it's very draining to me emotionally. And for some people, they have physical handicaps, too, that limit them because of some illness the Lord has allowed them to have or whatever. But that doesn't need to keep us from ministering to other people. There's always someone to whom you can minister, regardless of your limitations. In this little book, Beth talks about her grandmother. My grandmother spent her last 3 years in a hospital. During much of that time, she shared a room with a woman who, because of a stroke, was totally paralyzed. All she could move was her head, and because of God's grace, her spiritual heart. She prayed, she shared, and she served. In one situation, she prayed for a nurse to come help my grandmother, and one came hurrying in, although neither of the two women had pushed the call button. Her physical disability did not limit her spiritual capability. Isn't that beautiful? My mother is a woman given to hospitality. I didn't even realize this when I was living at home. I grew up on the mission field, and I left home when I was 15 to stay in the States and go to school. And I wasn't thinking about things like this at the time. But as I look back now, in the mission station where my parents lived, if anyone came through, a missionary or anyone else traveling through, it was at our home that they stayed. During World War II, there were hundreds of American and British soldiers in Iran, and it was our home where they spent the weekends when they were on R&R. My mother didn't put on any fancy things, but she served people and gave herself to people, and people always felt welcome in her home. And it was years after we came with the Navigators before I realized what a foundation had been built in my life by her example and by living in that home those 15 years that I was there. Mother is 95 now. She is severely crippled with arthritis. She walks with a walker, but still lives in her own home. And my two older sisters and I went out to spend Mother's Day with her this year. We wanted to take her out to dinner. Instead, she insisted on fixing dinner for us in her home. That was the thing that would bring her the most joy. Well, why force her to go out and walk with her walker into a restaurant when the thing that would give her the most joy was to have her three children around her table, which is something she never does because she's always alone? And it wasn't a fancy meal, but this is her nature, to give herself and to want to include her family in her life rather than be entertained by us. No matter what physical limitations we have, we can give ourselves. And Mother prays and writes letters and knits up a storm for other people. And she gives herself continually to others. I wonder what I'll be doing when I'm 95. But you see, one reason she's doing that at 95 is because it's something she cultivated all of her life. And her life was one given to people continually when she wasn't physically limited. Now the question is, how do I decide what my ministry is and where do I begin? Most of you are probably involved in a ministry, and perhaps the reason you're in this workshop is not so much for your own instruction, but how to help other people become more involved. I think initially we need to understand that there is nothing that is not sacred. We have this philosophy abroad in the church today of the sacred and the secular. And if you're doing Bible study, that's pleasing to God, but if you're washing dishes, he couldn't care less. For the Christian woman, for the Christian, everything we do is sacred. Whether it's making beds or cleaning our house or leading a woman to Christ or helping someone in Bible study. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. And God has planned it that our whole life is a ministry, regardless of what it is we put our hand and our mind and our heart to. We're ministering as unto him. It's my inner life that overflows to others. And that is the heart and core of whether I have any ministry at all. It's whether I'm developing the hidden person that Peter talks about in 1 Peter 3:4. The inner person who is a woman of a gentle and quiet spirit, and that is precious in the sight of God. If I'm diligently working at being that kind of a woman, my life will overflow in my own home. I will be able to do my housework with joy, care for my children and my husband with joy, and my life will overflow to those around me. But the next thing that I think we need to do is to really saturate with prayer. Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? Coming before God and asking him what his desire is for us, and coming with a completely willing heart to do whatever he asks. Now that's a little hard for some of us, because he might ask us to do something that would stretch us, and that's uncomfortable for us. But if we're ever going to minister to other people, we need to be stretched. We need to be drawn out of ourselves. And how much more content and fulfilled and happy that makes us when we are giving ourselves to other people and not worried about our own securities and our own needs. And along with asking God for what he wants us to do through prayer, in the arenas in which we are involved, I would include claiming promises. Promises for our husband, for our children, and for our ministry. That the Lord would use us through some promise from his word that we can come to again and again, and then it is God's work, not something being done in my own strength. And Skip and I have found that claiming his promises has given a tremendous richness and depth to our lives and our ministry, because then we're saying, God, you said, and we ask you to fulfill what you have promised that you would do. One of the promises I claim for my husband is Isaiah 28, verses 5 and 6. The Lord originally gave this to me when he was a regional director with the Navigators and was traveling extensively and supervising a lot of staff men. And it says, in that day shall the Lord of hosts be for a crown of glory and a diadem of beauty to the residue of his people. He will be for a spirit of judgment to him who sits in judgment, and for strength to them that turn the battle to the gate. Now, his sitting in judgment is not a matter of, like a lawyer or a judge, but decision-making, leading a team of men who are involved in a ministry or in a decision-making place. Perhaps your husband is the head of his company, or has others under him in his job, and he's in a place of decision making, or in the ministry he's leading a team. But in some respect, he's sitting in judgment, a good form of sitting in judgment. And strength to those who turn the battle to the gate. The battle is between Satan and God, and he has called us to be involved in that battle. And we are turning back the forces of the enemy to the gates of hell. When Jesus said to Peter, you are the rock on which I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Lawrence Annie has often said that the church so much today seems to be in a defensive posture. Gates are defensive. And if the gates of hell are not going to withstand the church, then it's the church that must be bombarding the gates of hell. It's not the gates that are going to come charging after us. Satan is on the defensive. We are on the offensive. And I pray for my husband that God would give him strength as he turns the battle to the gates of hell, whatever battle it is that he is involved in. So that's been a joyful promise for me to claim for him, along with the promises he claims for himself, that I just take over and join him in praying those for him. And many promises God has given us together in the arena of claiming together for our ministry. Isaiah 58:10-12, the Lord gave us early in our ministry with the Navigators. If you draw out your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall your light rise in obscurity and your darkness be as the noonday. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And those who will be of you shall build the old waste places. You will raise up the foundation of many generations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. One day recently I said something to Skip about, I'm so tired of people because we're involved with so many people. And he said, honey, don't forget that if you draw out your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, that God's promises are true. That's all I needed, because that's a promise that we have committed ourselves to for our lifetime. And I just needed that little reminder. A promise that we claim for our children, and that I often pray for my children, even though they're grown and married now, is Isaiah 54:13. All thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. I will never be an adequate teacher, but God is. And I come to him again and again that my children would be taught by him. Now, I need to give them the word of God, but down underneath, in the depths of their heart, God must be their teacher. And even now, as grown adults, and our daughter is a mother, there are so many things that come into their lives to disrupt their peace. Decisions, confusion, criticism. The battle rages. And I still come back to this verse, great shall be the peace of thy children. What a promise to lay hold of and claim for our children. And then a couple of promises from Proverbs 31 for my own life and ministry. Much of Proverbs 31 is not a promise, it's just statements about this godly woman. But verses 11 and 12 I take as a promise. The heart of her husband safely trusts in her, so that he has no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. And verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. So these are a couple of things that I pray for my own life and for my ministry, that God will do that in me. And I can't be that kind of a person by striving to be. Only God can make me that kind of a person. And as I come before him daily in prayer and ask him to do that in me, he will fulfill his promises. So I really feel that claiming his promises and coming to him in prayer is foundational to any ministry that we will ever have. And then I would say, begin where you are. Don't try to be like someone else. Don't try to figure out where out there you can have a ministry. Begin where you are. Begin in your home, ministering first of all, of course, to your own family. And then using your home as a place for hospitality and for encouraging and ministering to other people. One of the things that mothers of young children can really take advantage of is the fact that children can be the greatest link to other people. As they play with their friends from school or in the neighborhood, take advantage of that. Our tendency in this day, I think, is to say, I don't like those children that my children play with. Well, maybe they are just, that's just the family that needs to be loved and have someone who cares about them. But take advantage of the open doors that our children naturally give to us. And that's beginning right where you are, on your block and in your street, and with the children that they associate with in school. And then remember that you are Christ's ambassador wherever you are. The Holy Spirit lives within us, and no matter where we go, we represent Him. So whether it's the grocery store or the shopping mall, we don't necessarily have to be a great evangelist going up and tapping everybody on the shoulder. But sometimes people are watching us more than we realize, and particularly if we go back to the same places again and again, which is a very good idea, incidentally, to develop a relationship with the same checkout girl or the same clerk in a store or whatever. If we can try to do that, if we really care about developing a relationship with people, those are creative things that we can discover to do. And the way we relate to those people and the love of Christ that overflows from us to strangers can develop a relationship with them that God can use as an avenue of ministry. Are people really attracted to us when we're out there outside of our home? I'm so rebuked many times because I'm always in a hurry. And when I go to the grocery store or the shopping mall, I know there's a frown on my face and I'm just going like this. And every once in a while I think, now what kind of an impression are you creating about God who indwells you? And are people attracted by the kind of a person you are out there? And I do have to ask myself that question. There are many other things we could touch on. Many people have a far greater capacity for ministry than I do. But it's getting close to time to close, and I would like to open the time for some discussion. I want to mention four books, and then we'll take the last few minutes for an application. Let me mention the books and then see if you have any questions. This one I've mentioned by Beth Mainhood. Carol Mayhall's book, entitled Filled to Overflowing, is just the idea of what we've been talking about. If we really allow God to fill us up inside, our lives will overflow to needy people around us. Jeannie Fleming's book, A Mother's Heart, has much to do with ministering to your own children and the creative way in which she has learned how to minister to her children in many ways that I never thought of. I wished I'd read it when my children were still at home. And then this little book, Homemaking, by Balkia Dornenbaugh, who's the wife of our Europe director. She's Dutch. One of her chapters is on your divine task. One is on hospitality. One is on planning an organization, using your time. It's just a Bible study. It's not a book with questions and answers. And it's been a very helpful tool for people to understand what kinds of ministries they can be involved in. I think it would be helpful to you. Now, any questions or comments? What are some of the things you have learned in your own life about how God can use you to minister, or overcoming some of your inhibitions and your fears, or questions that you might have about anything I have shared? Yes.
Can you share one more thing? I'm somewhat like you, somewhat typical. I've been jumping into things. And so when I've been asked to do different things, of course, my probably body naturally reaction would be to say, no, I don't think I could do that. So I really give myself some time now. I'll pray about it, think about it. And then that really calls upon me to speak to me, whether he wants me to do it or not.
Good.
So I really try not to.
Not to say no.
Answer by yourself as I used to.
Good. That's if you just develop in your mind a habit of saying, I won't say no right off, and that we will give time to think and to pray about it, because for many of us, our first reaction is no.
Or yes.
Or yes, depending on which kind of a person we are. And in either case, it's wise to say, give me some time to think about it. And counsel with my husband and to pray. That's excellent. Some of us do say yes too easily. Good. Another comment or question?
I think
yes.
One,
excuse me.
I have just a question.
Yes, go ahead.
No, go ahead. My question is, do you have any ideas on evaluating the difference between stress that's valid because of the overloaded schedule versus allowing God to stretch you?
The question is, I'm saying this for the tape. The question is, how do you find the balance between stress that's really being overloaded and stress that is God stretching us? Okay, who has some answers to that question? We all have experience with it, I know. Yes?
I think of the book of Genesis, what it tells us that even though God created the world, he gave Adam a garden to take care of. And as long as I know what my garden is, and I'm working in that, even though I may get tired, I can do it. But when I get outside of that, it's like it's hard to explain, it's like a pressure that almost crushes you.
Mm-hmm.
So I know for me, when someone asks me to get involved in something, sometimes I won't even pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
If I know my garden's there and I want to have a reputation of being a faithful woman in the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
then I can't take on more.
Good. That's an excellent.
It's something over, and I can take something new on.
Good.
What's in the garden.
The illustration has to do with the Lord putting Adam in the garden. And when you get outside of your garden, then the stress descends on you. And so for each one of us, we need to figure out what is our garden to tend and stay within those limitations. And there again, prayer, you see. Lord, is this outside my garden? And studying yourself and enlisting your husband's help in studying you. That's why my husband has to hold me back now, because I seem to attract needy people who want to share their hearts, and my husband just closes the door sometimes for me and he says no for me. And I have learned to get his feedback, and that's one of the roles of our husband is to protect us from overextending ourselves. So I find that a very valid and helpful source to get his counsel. Was what you were going to say along that line? Uh-huh.
When we find times of stress in our life, in some high stress situation God has allowed to come into our life, is there? I think we can cut back on some of the other things.
Yes.
The stress that we can control, we can cut back on.
Right.
At times when God has some special stress factor into our lives.
Mm-hmm. And that's often true with stress, isn't it? Many times the stress is external and it's brought by God, and so then we need to make our decisions in the line of the things that we can control and perhaps cut back on them. That's good.
One thing that you said that is helping me is the whole idea of the seasons of our life, because I'm in the season of preschool children right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be as active as mine who doesn't have any children yet. And so for me to know what I can expect of myself helps me. I have to be realistic.
Good. We need to be realistic about our seasons and discover what is right for us at this period of time, instead of either comparing ourselves with someone else or wanting to be more than we're able to be right now. Yes, Elaine.
Along that line, I put a footnote over when I was writing down your notes about the season, that I feel like you have to do it for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
I found for myself, like, summertime comes and we're not going to have Bible study. I think, oh boy, now is my time to do all these Bible studies on my own. Ask me at the end of summer how many I've done on my own. And zero. And I need the discipline of meeting with another woman for my own walk with the Lord. I'm sorry to say that. But it just seems like with all the outside things that come in, that because I know I'm responsible to another person, it really helps me stay safe.
So what you're saying is that I need to minister to someone else for my own self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's good, because it's easy to think I can go it on my own after years of discipline, but I find the same to be true. that I do not, I have a quiet time faithfully, but I do not dig deeply in Bible study unless I'm involved with someone else. So find someone else to help you be involved in intake of the word, and that will also give you a ministry with that other person. And ministry is a two-way thing, isn't it? It isn't just me ministering to the other person, but I'm always ministered to. If I have a teachable heart, I'm not the teacher and the other person is the learner. We're all learners together at the feet of Jesus. And so even when we're ministering to someone else, we are receiving much and need to be open to what they have to teach us. Okay, any other comment or question? Yes.
I find myself in conflict sometimes with the expectations of my husband and the ministry and family, and I'm an insecure person, mm-hmm. basically, and for years gave myself so much to other people that I just really got worn down, and my husband wanted to go back to work, and so I did, and I am now working like 3/4 time and mothering and homemaking, mm-hmm. and being the faithful wife. But I was wondering how do people balance that, where your husband really encourages you to go work with things and facts rather than with people so much because of being worn out from people. I guess I feel like it's not spiritual enough to work outside the home because God puts it as a burden to be at home too.
Right. It is difficult. The question has to do with how do you maintain a balance when you're working, and that's what your husband wants you to do, and so your desire is to please your husband, and yet you also want to have a ministry, and there just isn't much time and energy for all of it. Who has an idea? Georgia?
I didn't plan to go back to work. My husband encouraged me, and I found that it was God's plan. For 13 years, I was in the business world, and I found that the minister on lunch hours, mm-hmm. and keep your ministry within the context of your work, and you talk about being an ambassador. If you can allow the love of Jesus Christ to live through you in the business world today, they will come to you like flies to a honeypot. Mm-hmm. They are looking for love, mm-hmm. and just the love of Christ in your life will draw people to you.
Yes.
And your desk will become the altar.
Counseling place.
It's a matter of discipline because I was trying to get away from so much counseling and going out with people's problems because I was getting emotionally worn out. And maybe it's a matter of discipline because I find that people keep on coming at work now.
Yeah.
You know,
you may have to be selective too. Mm-hmm. And you cannot get involved with every person who has a problem.
I say no, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you are in the marketplace and do want to minister to the people who are around you at work, then you might think very seriously about how much to be involved in the church or in Bible studies and that sort of thing. You really need to, because I think we've grown up in the church thinking, well, I've got to have a ministry in the church. And you might need to rethink whether or not that's a priority if God has given you a ministry in it at your workplace. Mm-hmm.
Just a funny anecdote from this. Friend that I've been talking to in the last 2 or 3 years, when she became a Christian, she kept coming to me and she said, I just don't know that they can tell that I'm a Christian, or she said, I still can, you know, really do some rough things. And so one day this woman came up to me and she said, you know, Patty, I know you're a Christian now because you don't slam the phone down anymore.
Oh, how fun. Good. Well,
they are watching.
That's true. And we are being watched, even if we aren't at work, in our neighborhood and in all the places where we go, far more than we realize. That's scary in a way, and there are some ways in which we would like to get out from under that and wish it weren't that way. But we have to come back to the fact that we are here as His ambassadors and that God has given us a mission in this world. And we don't want just a godly marriage and a godly home as an end in itself. The world is dying for lack of a model of people who are joyful and have a root system in that which is eternal, as individuals and as families. And God has put you in your workplace or in your neighborhood to be a light and an ambassador for him. It's almost time to close. I would like to give you an application and give you just a few moments. We might even do this together since the group is small. I had thought of breaking up into small groups, but maybe we'll just do it all together. Think for a moment and write down the names of three people, three women, who have ministered to you and what the contribution was that they made to your life. It might be your mother, it might be a Sunday school teacher, it might be a friend. Three women who have ministered to you and what the contribution was that they made to your life. And then in the few minutes that we have left, let's just share with one another. And we can learn from each other how some women have ministered to us.